gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Nazara Technologies conference call hosted by ICICI Securities. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Jairam Shetty from ICICI Securities. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Shetty.
Hi, good morning everyone, and welcome to Nazara Technologies conference call. On behalf of ICICI Securities, I would like to thank Nazara Technology for giving us the opportunity to host this call. From the company, we have with us Mr. Akshat Rathi, co-founder of Nordwin Gaming, Karandeep Singh, CFO of Nordwin Gaming, Anupriya Sinadas, Head of Corporate Development. With that introduction, let me now hand over the call to Anupriya Sinadas for opening remarks.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. In this call, we will discuss Nordwin Gaming's acquisition of Freak4U Gaming. We are pleased to have with us Akshat Rathi, the co-founder of Nordwin Gaming, and Karandeep Singh, the CFO of Nordwin Gaming, who will provide valuable insights into this acquisition strategy. Nordwin is a material subsidiary of Nazara. Please note that we are in the silent period, and we will not be addressing any questions on this quarter's guidance and beyond. I would now like to hand over the call to Karandeep to talk about the details of the deal. Over to you, Karan.
Thank you. Thank you, Anupriya. And good morning, everyone, or good day, wherever you're calling in from. So on the 29th of Jan, 2024, Nordwin acquired 13.5% stake in Freak4U Gaming by investing 8 million euros. And we also got a board seat to get a very closer view of their operations. For context, Freak4U was founded in 2011. It's a global full-service company specializing in esports and gaming. It's domiciled in Germany with headquarters in Berlin, but it has offices across Europe, Asia, and North America. Very recently, which is on the 28th of June, Nordwin Singapore, our international arm, signed agreements to acquire the balance 86.49% for 30.3 million euros, which is circa 271 crores, through share swaps. So as we complete this transaction this week, Nordwin's share in Freak4U Gaming will immediately increase to 57%. Nordwin continues to hold exclusive rights to acquire the balance 43%, which is with the founders who continue to run the company Freak4U Gaming. Freak4U Gaming's strength in the PC gaming and publisher support services is very complementary to Nordwin's capabilities in mobile gaming. The integration of Freak4U Gaming's capabilities along with its presence in developed markets will serve as a substantial revenue driver for Nordwin. This strategic alignment will complement Nordwin Gaming's strong execution capabilities in emerging markets, enabling the establishment of a margin-accretive global delivery model, and that's a very pioneering achievement in the esports sector. For people who are interested, you know, Freak4U generated revenues of 36.9 million euros in the calendar year 23 at an EBITDA loss of 8.8 million euros. These are unaudited numbers. But recently, based on some actions that the Freak4U gaming management team has taken to optimize their cost base and the potential synergies with Nordwin, we are confident of consolidating a profitable revenue company in FY25. I would like now invite Akshat, the co-founder and CEO of Nordwin, to please share his views on the strategic fit of this acquisition for Nordwin.
Thanks, Karan. Thanks, Anupriya. Hello, everyone. I've had the privilege of going and talking to some of you at different times of some of our events. Some of you who have not had the opportunity and we have not had the opportunity to meet you, please be my guest to come to one of our large things that we do. Anupriya will coordinate. It's always nice to see us in action of what we do. we do great things in India like Comic-Con. We do great things in India like the BGMS, which is on Star Sports, and we have very large IPs like NF7, etc. So please come to one of our large ones, and then we'll be able to always have a great chat with you. And and that's a great segue to understand what we are trying to go ahead and build, right? So as NODWIN expands on something that I've often talked about, which is called timeshare of mindshare of people. That's a very important metric for us. As you know, NODWIN is not a platform, right? It's not a destination. It's not a website. It's not an OTT platform. It's not a social media network. It's none of those. NODWIN, this house of brands where our IPs and our brands are looked forward for a lot by a lot of people, brands, publishers, communities, and they engage with us across the network of what NODWIN builds, whether it is our influencer that they are watching on Instagram, or there is our content that's being watched on Amazon Prime like Playground, or our chess tournaments that are on YouTube, or BGMS that is on Star Sports, or our merchandise that's available, our tickets that are available on Insider and Book My Show. So we have a very diversified community strategy across the world. And as NODWIN keeps on expanding in other acquisitions that you're looking at, think of NODWIN's growth as two parts. It's always been a very important metric for us. Our Prime Minister called it the Global South. I think it's a good metric because that's where the growth of people is. So everything from Indonesia, Philippines, India, Bangladesh, Nepal, UAE, Nigeria, Kenya, South Africa, Mexico, Argentina, Brazil, and parts of Central Asia are all the growth part of the world which is there. But the revenue for us and for most of the world sits in Korea, Japan, China, Europe, America. And that's the diversified strategy which we have. We would love to keep going and making acquisitions in the north that drive revenue, and acquisitions in the south that drive delivery and excellence and margin contributions. For Freaks, as one of the best ones in the world, top companies in the world in gaming and esports with offices in Taiwan, in Germany, in the U.S., it helps us go ahead and drive the North revenue part. And it also helps that we have announced acquisitions in Turkey, in the Middle East, which helps us in delivery centers for any revenue that comes in. And we'll keep on driving this. Mindshare of timeshare of mindshare and this North-South investment and development strategy is very, very central to what we are going to be building. So everything that we do, we have done in the past and we'll do in the future. Some of you will have more conversations with us. This kind of context is extremely important for us to go ahead and broad-base our conversations on, because that's, call it vision, mission, call it whatever, but this is the way we want to go ahead and move our company forward with the blessings of all the investors in Nazara, Crafton, Sony, et al. That's the overall vision of why we are doing this. Specifically for on a conversation on Freaks, I think like every other gaming esports company that is across the world, it's gone through its time of pain and suffering. I think a lot of those were built out of valuations that were not sustainable, especially on the losses that were there. And to us, not losing money is an important part. So that's the reason we've taken a certain amount of time. And we'll keep on taking that time. I think Nitish said it really well. Sometimes you want to go out and walk. Sometimes you want to run. Sometimes you want to go out and banter. And sometimes you want to just pause and just look at things which are there, because we are looking at an inflection point on the world stage which is there. And choosing partners, choosing different people who will join this NODWIN village, it's important to go ahead and both judge very, very carefully of what they will do, how they will contribute, and how they will give continuity to us as we go forward. So just those overall guidances in terms of why we are building, who we are choosing, how we are choosing, where we will be making those investments is an important conversation to have. In terms of going forward, I'd love to go ahead and take some questions, because I think there are a lot of people out there, and Anupriya, is that okay? Should we take some questions?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use only handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management will be able to address questions from all the participants in the conference, kindly limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. We will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Jinesh Joshi from Prabhudas Leeladhar Private Limited.
Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, my question is on the revenue profile of Freaks. Now, if I look at 2023, we reported revenues of about 27 million. And in 22, we were at about 38 million. So can you highlight the reason behind the decline in revenue in the 2023? And also, if you can just talk about what is the 1H revenue run rate so far and how should we think of growth from here?
I'll answer the overall question and Karan can be specific around it. Context is, and thank you for the question. The context is important here. So Freaks 4U was predominantly in 2022, it was the high time of the COVID pandemic. It was nearly at the end. There was the frost that was there because of what was happening in the world. Gaming, everything was very frothy. At that time, they were driving a lot of revenue that was being built out of their capacity that they had expanded in Germany and in other parts of the world. And revenue was coming in. But that revenue was short-lived. And against that revenue, there was a huge amount of capacity in people that was built. That's why you see the loss that was there. In Europe, specifically France and Germany and other parts of the world and other parts of Europe, firing people is a very long-term exercise. So they carried a lot of fixed cost at that time. And even the fixed cost, their revenue expectation at that time that they should be able to go ahead and do it was close to 50 million. I mean, they didn't do 50 million, they did lesser. Because of that, they lost money and that created knock-off effects of stress that comes in 23 and then on to 24. As for us, the quality of revenue becomes really important to put into, right? As a company, they hold IPs like 99 Damage, 1TV, Prime League, Valorant, Challengers in the Dark League. They also hold DreamHack Germany, etc. So they have that capability of some great IPs, and they also work as a very strong agency for brands and publishers to go ahead and run against Taiwan, in Germany, in France, in the U.S. That part of the business was, I think, the one that had the margin accretive value. So pairing, for us to go ahead and make that investment into the company, it was very important that we look at a roadmap of profitability at this. And if you've looked at some publicly facing announcements Freaks has made, they've had to lay off people for, I think, two rounds of layoffs that they had done on and around the first time we made that investment, and also very recently. Some of those are the causalities of what we've been asking to go ahead and for them to go ahead and look at a sustainable business before we make that investment.
Sir, what is the 1H run rate and what kind of growth can we expect? If you can just highlight that bit as well.
I don't think I'm able to give a forward-looking guidance on the prepared question. I'll leave current.
Yeah, thank you, Akshat, for giving all the context. And hi. So, like Akshat said, I don't think we'll give any guidance, but I can, as I followed up in my introduction, I think we're looking for a profitable revenue consolidation into NODWIN as we complete the transaction. I think more details can follow as we go through the year, but for now, we can give you that this is a a healthy company, which is a profitable company that we need to consolidate.
One last question from my side. I think Fleet got incorporated in 2011, and if I heard you right, you mentioned that in 2023, the EBITDA loss was about 8.8 million. I understand the reasons which Akshat cited, but going ahead from here on, what can be the steady state EBITDA that one should look from Fleet?
Yeah, like I said, I don't think I'm going to give any numbers, but there are potential synergies that we'll be exploiting between the two businesses, which should be margin accretive. We are now, you know, launching the global delivery platform, which is something that you guys are aware that India is the pioneer in that, but nobody's pioneered in esports. That's something we're looking to do. All of those ideas, you know, between the skills they have, the capabilities they have, the skills and capabilities that NODWIN has, will be, you know, born to bear in our numbers in the quarters to come. So no specific numbers, but definitely huge amount of, you know, opportunities that we'll be exploiting as we work out.
Sure. So just one follow-up. I'll tweak the question a bit. Globally, I mean, esports companies, typically in the Western world, what kind of EBITDA margin do they make? If you can share that.
Oh, I can go ahead and get that answer. And this is, please take it partially as a pinch of salt, partially as a joke, and partially true. In the Western world, in gaming and esports, every company loses money.
Okay.
That's been one of the problems in the industry at such. And we've seen this, right? One of the reasons I want to go ahead and build NODWIN in the way which is very different than everyone else, and with God's will, we've been able to go ahead and do it, is the Western world was predicated around building the gaming and esports world around losses. And that's why you've seen the SPACs in the U.S. have failed. We've seen companies that have been in Europe and America have failed. Europe and America, unfortunately, built a model around frothy loss-making, and that's fine. There are time and place for everything. I think the Asian way it has been to go ahead and do it much more sustainability, and that's been one of my driving factors in life. I want to go ahead and do it a little differently. We want to go ahead and say that an Indian company can be one of the top companies in the world, and we can go ahead and build this sustainably, profitably. There are ways to do this, right? And unfortunately, for the Western world, all of these companies lose money, and you can look at comparables everywhere in the world. They're Goldman Sachs, everyone being Katrina, putting out reports that they're expecting one of these companies.
Sure, sir. I have more questions, but I'll get back in the queue. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deep Shah from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity, and thanks for that initial vision that you laid out for the company. So two questions. One, if you could help us better understand, does this acquisition help us bridge any capabilities gap, or it is more of a way to expand our geographical presence? And second, in terms of your overall vision for NODWIN, where would you think that the last 5 years from when we started as a part of, say, the Nazara family, we've reached today, right? What would you think, what was your vision, where you are today, and how do you see that, whether you see that today the way BGMS could be on Star Sports, you see a lot more events becoming that large. So the last 5 years, how have they been, and what do you think the vision for the next 3 years is? And the earlier question on the capability versus geographical reach. If you could help us with this, it would be very useful.
Thank you. Again, appreciate the question. Very, very insightful question. I've done a couple of podcasts, and I've come done a couple of shows just on those two topics. But the short answer to that is, and I'm happy to link them so that you have a much more detailed 1 hour answer, 1.5 hour answer on those. But the short answer to the first question, which is that when you want to go build this, it's a mixture of everything, right? So there is not one binary answer that you want to go ahead and have. Do we get capabilities? Yes. What are the kind of capabilities we get? We get a great delivery location in, we get a great technologically high-end AAA-rated production facility for esports in Europe. right? There are studios, there are locations that are there. It's just like some of you visited our location in Gurgaon, which is there. It's phenomenal. We've got some of these great locations that are there across the world. So we've got that. Why is that important? European publishers, the people who have a lot of money for the European market, want to go out and do activities there. Where do they do them? They need a place that's there, right? The further logistically you are, the more disconnected both from language and from players and from community you are. So the further you are, the worse it is. So we've got that facility now in the heart of Europe, in Germany, very best in Berlin. Good city, cool city to go ahead and do. So you get a great capacity, which is there. You also get capabilities that come in. The capabilities become the people. So as Nodwin makes investments, then you saw we have invested into Ninja, we've invested into a couple of other companies like Comic-Con. One of the big tenets for us that we try to do is to keep the founders with us. Now, why are founders important? A founder mentality, it's just not, hey, this company, no, you pay them an earn-out and then they go away. To me, an earn-out is a bad word because you earn and then the person wants to go out. You want founder mentality in Nodwin because we like to go ahead and have founders go on something called missions. Missions, because we are all gaming company, are activities founders want to go ahead and do when their main mission is complete. You don't want them to leave. You want them to be excited about doing another mission. And as an example right now, one of the Freaks for You downstream founders is a guy called Sami. He was the founder of the Freaks office in France. The Freaks office in France is no longer operational for us. It is not something that is value accretive. But we didn't want to get rid of him. We gave him a mission that we have these 40 missions that are there. And he said, I'd like to go ahead and set up the Central Asia. Central Asia for us, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, are all very strong growth markets that they're looking at. They're all indicators around economy, people, youth, government are great, which is there. And you've already started seeing some of the announcements coming in. They're very small, but they've started coming in from us. And he's now become the head of Central Asia. Our Turkey founder has gone and one of the Turkey founders has gone and taken over our Middle East division. So you want to be able to create missions out of this, right? So you get a great founder who's built a 40 million euro company at one time and have the ability to go ahead and go on to these big missions we will be creating in the future. Because the Nodwin journey is not right now, right? Nodwin is not here, say, hey, we'll build a unicorn or whatever. Our long-term vision, our non-year vision is to build a billion-dollar revenue company, to be one of the largest youth media companies in the world. And for us, if we have to go ahead and do that, we'll need the ability to go ahead and inspire founders and build something called a founder circle in the company that allows us to go have that. So we get both capability and capacity out of this. And as far as your second question goes, which is where were we 5 years ago, which is there, I think we've always liked to put our head down and get some stuff done. Right? We started an industry sector in India. When I often joke about the fact that the first time we ever created thing, I got returnable mouse pads as sponsorship. And I often let that sink in, returnable mouse pads. I had a tournament for which a brand gave me mouse pads and said, when the tournament is finished, please give the mouse pads back. And I had to pay salaries, I had to pay people, I had to go ahead and make the event happen. And that's where we are, and now we are sitting with our revenue, which is there. So it has taken us a long time to go ahead and build this. I think we are in phase 3 out of 6 of the roadmap we have built out. We've been blessed with great investors, which is there, and we'll continue. We will continue to that phase 6, which I talked about, to try and build a billion-dollar revenue company for the largest youth media company in the world. So we'll see where we go.
Right. Thanks for that elaborate answer. It's quite an enterprising mission that you're out to. So if, you know, I could just add a follow-up that when you say move on this phase 3 to 6 and that's quite a vision out there, very, how do we think about individual events or IPs? So is it that you get one successful somewhere and then you replicate that, or is it more of you do many things, some of them work, some of them don't work, and then what works, you further double down on them? So how, is it very linear? Is it very spray and then you figure out, okay, whatever works, let's just take this ahead. How does that work when you evolve from, say, phase 3 to 4 and 5 towards your phase 6?
There's a little bit of investor in all of us. I run my own family office. I've been an entrepreneur multiple times over. The short answer to it is nobody knows. But we still know what kind of... I think the journey is a very contra answer for me. And I know I'll try to answer that question, but it's a contra answer. I think my experience set is trying to understand what doesn't work. In a blue sky, in a blue ocean strategy, you know, I don't know what works, but I started understanding what doesn't work, right? So what do? We use, in our common language, I use a grassroots angel VC PE kind of a strategy for IPs. At any given time right now, for example, we have our community management team trying out about 40 different games. We are trying our community spread across 27 different languages, which we are trying out. We are also testing out about 30, 35 different communities in India. So the northeast of India behaves very differently than the south of India for the games they like, amount of time they spend, amount of length in the language that they communicate with their communities, the tonality of the language, the kind of stars they like, the kind of jokes they make, the kind of lingua franca of gaming which is there. And you want to test everything. You want to test, hey, is a MOBA doing well? Is a fighting game going to do well? Is shooting going to do well? Now you add the complexity of trying to do this across the world. So what do? We test out with every given time. Sometimes you hear us investing in growth kind of thing. What are we doing here? We're testing out IPs. We're testing out communities. We'll do a small tournament. We'll put a 5 lakh rupees prize into something in a college. If it's successful, we're seeing the right kind of traction. We'll go ahead and increase that to a 50 lakh rupees investment. And we'll test against that. If that works out, then we'll make a 2 crore investment against it. And we'll test out against that. And then we have failure rates across the board, just like startups, right? We'll have failure rates of 60 to 70 to 80% at the earlier stages, reducing down to about 30 to 40% at the large stages. But we'll have failures all across because nobody knows the right answer. But we know that if we keep this our finger on the pulse of the youth across the world, we will get the right answers. For example, this is not a forward-looking statement, but one of the cool things that we found out that gamers across the world like and sneakers. So we will now look to do something in sneakers and hip-hop. Because it's an important thing to go ahead and look out for. Right now, whether it is a music event, whether it is an influencer, whether it is a sneaker lineup, whether it is a launch drop, which is there, maybe it's a festival. I don't know what the final answer is. We'll experiment against all of them. Whatever we go ahead and try and do, we need to go ahead and run it through this cycle that we say, which is large. Some of them will go ahead and pop, like how BGMS has popped or NH7 has popped. And that's great. And sometimes we'll have to go ahead and acquire large behemoths because they already have those IPs, because between a build and buy decision, it's easier, cheaper, faster, better, and we get people to go ahead and run it when we acquire a large enough IP. But most of the times, we are incubating most of these things out from our ecosystem. I know, long answer to your short question.
No, it is very useful, and all the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahul Jain from Dolat Capital. Please go ahead. Mr. Jain,
hello.
I have unmuted your line. Kindly proceed.
Yes, thank you. So basically, I have a couple of questions. If you could share, what is the dilution we have done on the Singapore subsidiary in the share swap for this transaction?
Karan, you want to take that one?
Yeah, Rahul, you want to finish the question? So we'll definitely have some loading it down.
Sorry?
I said you had a couple of questions. You want to finish your questions? I'm noting your questions.
Yeah. Okay, that is question number one. Second thing is, why we are not taking the entire 86% right away as a part of the transaction, and why 43% would have come much later? And any reason for the valuation jump that has happened versus the December round? There's a significant jump. So does that reflect the traction that has come in the business in the last 6 month basis? Those are my questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Rahul. Akshat, let me just speak it off and then you can please jump in. So first on the dilution, so we have a minimal dilution. We continue to hold a significant majority, upwards of 75%, you know, in Singapore. So just context around that. And so it's a small dilution that we've done to kind of, you know, get the share swaps completed. Why 86% is not done right away? I think Akshat had answered this question. I think we want the founders to continue to be invested in, you know, running the operations, contributing to the larger cause of Nodwin. So which is why we've done a staggered, you know, approach to kind of, you know, take shares enough for us to kind of, you know, consolidate and rock company with an exit to their existing investors. But the founders' shares, you know, at the right prudent time, we have the right to, you know, convert them and make them as Nodwin shareholders. So that has been done with some, you know, thought in mind so that the founders can continue to operate the company that it is. And it sends a very strong message to everyone across the, you know, the clients they have and the employees they have. The last part, I think this is, you know, I don't think there is any point of view in terms of, you know, the jump or drop in the valuation. In the valuation. I think this is just, I think you should look at this as a joined up idea between what we invested initially and what we've got now. I think together, you know, this deal was worth 38.3 million euros, 30.8 million went up front. And it was, it was just kind of, we took about 6 months to get closer to the business, understand the business, and that's why we were able to put a fair market value to it. And it, as you can see, it is about, you know, a very, very prudent, you know, you know, split between cash and stock that we've done here. So there is no specific answer on the up and down on the valuation. I think it's a composite deal that you should look at.
Yeah, so just one clarification. So that this 30 million euro, which is the consideration, this is towards 86% or towards incremental 43%?
No, this is for the 86%.
So basically, and this share swap and the cash, share swap would happen, so they will get the Nodwin Singapore stake right away, or only part of it will go to them right away, because you're saying the gradual 43% would come with no incremental outgo at a later date. Is that the understanding?
That is correct. The value has been fixed now, but there are some underlying, you know, performance targets that we've kept in mind. But what we are highlighting today, or what we communicated today, is the total value. There is no additional outgo that is going to go for the acquisition of the balance 43%.
So basically, this is the maximum. If they are not achieving the KRAs which we have defined, the actual outgo could be even lower than what we have just identified.
Yeah, but yeah, it could be potentially, but you know, that's something we.
I hope not.
Yeah,
I hope not, because you want to remember, I want to inspire these people to go out and do great things. So your question is, your statement is valid. This is the maximum. Might be lesser, but I hope this covers the entire scope. The other one little bit that I wanted to go also add in terms of the question that you had asked. It's important to go and put context to why we are going and getting this done with them at this stage right now. The people who have swapped over right now, as you can see, the founders are still holding their stock because they have deliverables. We want to have some of the best investors in the world in the space that we have as part of our cap table. So the people who have swapped over right now are some of the most well-known investors in Germany and Europe that come to our cap table, right? So the consortium that comes in also gives us the pedigree of investors that come in into Nodwin, who not only believe our value in the stock swap, but also believe in the story going forward. As you know, when you build this village that you're there, you not only need founders, you need great investors, and we've been blessed with them. So our ability to go out and swap in great investors, to go out and give them the value of an Indian growth story is also very important. It's in small context, I think.
Right. And since these investors are coming at a Nodwin Singapore subsidiary, for them, the cash out opportunity would be an internal sale eventually, or you have plans for even the Singapore subsidiary to become public at some point?
Very strong forward-looking statement. God's will be there. We want to go ahead and say it's a liquidity condition, right? We've always defined this as a liquidity condition. And suffice to say that whether it is an internal sale, whether it's a buyout, whether it's a listing, whether it is sell out of the whole company, whatever, every liquidity condition is on the table. We'd like to go ahead and have that with it. Because who knows what happens in the future, right? My job is to build. You build a great thing, someone will value us, and then we'll see.
Right.
And also, Raul, just to add, I think the fact that these people are coming on our cap table, I think they are interested in building Nodwind. I think, you know, that's an important message also, that they are looking at, you know, joining hands with Nodwind and building Nodwind as Akshay pointed out, as a global youth media company. We all like the division, and the build is the focus here.
Right. And just last bit on the business side of it, you think there are kind of things which Freaks does and we could do more of that in India at some point, which could be an added stream of opportunities for us?
Of course, 100%. That's the one of the big reasons, right? I think maybe it has not come in, so I'll go ahead and take 1 minute to go ahead and explain. I'm not going to call it racist, but Indian, like, you know, when outsourcing started, outsourcing was always a bad word, right? Like, people and Indians were looked down on, call center executives, etc., right? While margin was being accretive, as India has gone through the call center industry where we've got more and more value-added services, now we've got Finacle, etc., that have been also built out on the back of that. Same as China's industry. It started off as knockoffs, and now they make BYD and they make Rocket Ships also, which is there. I think evolutionarily for us, Sneaks is like a triple-A company. It's looked at by the world, sitting in the Western world, as a triple-A company. Nodwind is looked at as an efficient, solid company, but not super cool. And you understand? We get it done. We are efficient. We are profitable. We are all of those. But we are not considered sexy, if I have to go ahead and use the word without any negative connotations. It's just not considered. Freaks is considered really cool to go ahead and do this. Which is there. When you bring in that capability and that pedigree to go ahead and say, which is there, you can now sell that vision and that capability of being really cool, but you can deliver it with Indian costs or Turkish costs, whatever, while keeping the top layer as management, which is there. That's added value. That's the reason. One of the big things that happens is we bring the Freaks nomenclature, the Freaks capability of selling, the Freaks coolness of things to go ahead and do with the cost structures that come out and the profitability structures that come out of it.
So essentially you're saying that this element of...
Sir, I would request you to kindly rejoin the queue for follow-up questions, please. There are others who are waiting for their turn.
We can. Why don't you drop us a mail? We'll happily go ahead and have deeper conversations on this. Happy to help. Happy to answer.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek Kumar from GM Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Akshat. Good to hear you again. Many of my questions have been answered. I just wanted to build upon your comment that most of the global, you know, esports companies are losing money, and your vision of, you know, turning this into a profitable company. You know, my understanding is, whatever little understanding I have of esports, it's a very, you know, on-site centric, if we can use that word. You need to host the tournaments or the events, etc., in those localities. So when we talk about global delivery model for a very physical sort of event, which element of the delivery can be, you know, done globally from low-cost location, etc.? Essentially, what are the margin levers that we will have, to turn this into a profitable company?
And super question, Abhishek, as always. I love having this chat with you.
So let's look at any typical event, right? It doesn't matter what you want to go ahead and program. If it's an e-sport event, as you said, traditionally it was all about being on location, which is very important, right? If you want to go ahead and cater to a German fan, you have to be in Germany. If you have to cater to a Mexican fan, you have to be in Mexico. If you have to be engaging to an Indian fan, you have to be in India. So location, let's just say venue, is a cost, which is there, which I don't think changes at all. And I'll stop here and bring another vector, which is there. Most startups, when you go ahead and do, and you'll invest into, you look at multiple companies, which are there, predicate their entire building out on where they are. Nodwin is based out of Gurgaon because I live in Gurgaon. Nazara is based out of Mumbai because Nitesh lives in Mumbai. Founders go and the initial employees you will find are from Mumbai or Gurgaon. And most of these e-sports companies got their initial employees where they started from in and around the city. But e-sports is fundamentally a Western phenomenon. So most of these people come in from the Western world. So this is the second vector that comes in. And the last one that I'll go ahead and bring in to go ahead and complete the trifecta is the cost of everything is also the delivery of languages. So think of like the Football World Cup happening in Brazil as an example. It's watched by 3 billion people. But 3 billion people are broadcasted by 295 broadcasters. Not 295 broadcasters sit out there. Doordarshan, for example, when it wants to cover the Olympics, doesn't go to the Olympics in Japan or now in Paris to go and do this. They get a feed, a centralized feed, and then put up a studio at a certain location in maybe Doordarshan, Prasad Bharati in Delhi. And in that studio, they put in analysts and people to go ahead and commentate in that local language. So the way esports broadcast works, especially for the multitude of languages that we are doing. For example, there is an esports World Cup that we are doing along with Freaks. The Freaks team is going and getting a central video feed from Riyadh, which is then being broadcasted by us in 30 languages approximately. The feeds are going to 30 different studios of Nodwin, which are delivering all of this across the world. Instead of doing all of this out of Germany, now we are doing it across the world. So the biggest cost lever is always people. Because high-cost people always cost you more. Physical locations will always cost you physical locations. Right? Think of it like that's part of the marketing cost that you need to go ahead and do. The cost of delivery, the cost of technology, and the cost of manpower, especially at management levels, to go ahead and make sure that this pipeline, graphics, lower thirds, video bit rates, encoders, broadcasters, commentators, analysts, are the ones that cost money, if you especially try to fly them to main locations. And that evolutionary change is what is happening in esports for us. And we become the center of it because we've always focused on the growth languages of the world.
No, understood. That's very elaborate. One follow-up, that means the media rights of esports, and I've always felt, that is the one vector for scalability that we need to track. The media right value has to go and across languages, across geographies. I just wanted your comment on the scenario in India today as far as the esports media rights are concerned. Are we seeing, any improvement or any offtake? We know the BGMS is there, but in terms of, it doesn't reflect in the revenue growth as far as the media rights are concerned. Just your view on the trajectory or the outlook of media rights, especially in India, of esports.
So I'll answer this question as calling it one of those black swan events. Nodwin kept having a black swan event every year in its evolution. Thank God we have a six-engine plane where one engine fails every year. Sometimes BGMI gets banned, sometimes PUBG Mobile gets banned, sometimes Free Fire gets banned, and now the entire media rights, the entire media industry in India has collapsed. Right? We are now looking at a duopoly at best. We are there. And anytime when a monopoly or a duopoly kind of exists, like earlier, when 4 years ago, when media rights was being tracked by us extremely actively, we had 10, 15 market player. There was NX player, there's Loco, there's Router, there's YouTube, there's Twitch, there's Amazon, UTDL, there's Netflix, there's Jio, there's Vodafone, there was, I don't remember the other. there's Hotstar, there's Sony Live, and so on and so forth. All of that was propped up by the valuations that came out of the pandemic, and then the crash happened as the as companies moved towards profitability as a metric, finally, their ability to go out and acquire content and the ability, more importantly, to sell that content became a very important critique. And you're seeing that experiment actually being done by the largest one, which is Jio also, right? Jio has increased its data prices because they want to fundamentally increase the Jio TV prices. So if you look at now that as a conjunction of Jio TV prices going up and Jio cinema prices going up and also the OTT prices going up, X into Y actually increases the value that is there. And ad support is actually falling very, very high. That's why you're having non-ad models being tried out right now. So the ability to go ahead and have a media rights increase is based on media buyers. Remember, we are not the destination. So unless there is a solid competition that will happen for this churn that will happen, we will have, and we have those partnerships, right? I'm blessed with the fact that our CEO and one of my closest friends, Siddharth Kedia, has now become the head of Jio, and he will work with him. PVR is another place that we made public announcements that we are working with him. Amazon Mini TV carries Playground for us. YouTube is one of our big partners with stuff that we do. So it's not that they're all gone away, but I consider it a black swan event across the worldwide media industry. Content is being questioned by a lot of people. So I think it'll be okay. I think it's just stabilized. But I can't drive media value in a storm.
Understood. Thank you. That's very helpful and all the best.
Thank you.
A reminder to all the participants to kindly limit their questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Manan Puladia from MKP Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi, Akshat. Congratulations on the acquisition. So my first question is on the strategy bit with respect to acquiring Freaks4U, Ninja, etc. And like you said about being a global cost center, right? But so far we've seen the esports companies like you yourself said be loss-making all across Europe and the Western world. We even saw the Face Clan SPAC take a really huge dump, right? So I'm just curious about how we're changing that, how we intend to make this a profitable entity very soon, and what exactly are the levers that we want to drive except the ones that you just mentioned.
So most of this has been answered. I'll also get Karan to go ahead and complete this answer because he's driving that with me. But the short answer to this question is, look, how do you drive profitability? You either drive it by revenue or you drive it by reducing costs. For us, whenever we make that investment, which is there, we never want costs. We never want to be negative, right? So we have a conversation. We sit down, have a conversation with the founders, and why are costs high? And you have that conversation, and there's like our people, capacity, fixed cost, et cetera. And you go through it like a fine-tooth comb, right? Why do you think it took us, it took us this long between December and now to have those conversations with Freaks people, and they wanted to go ahead and make that change that it is now going to be profitable. And then you go ahead and rationalize the kind of revenue that will come in, the margin that will come in, where it's going to come from, what do you want to build, what do you want to build together, right? That's for a revenue group company like Freaks. And the other part that is there is, where does Freaks outsource to? Let's just say, fine. They say, okay, no problem, Akshat, we believe in you. We want to outsource. Where do you want to outsource? A German person, where does most German people sit outside Germany? In Turkey. Right? That's where the capability center comes in. You don't want to be, unfortunately, because of the time zones and the language issues, which is that you can't really outsource German out of India. It won't work. English you can go ahead and outsource to India, but German you can't outsource to India. So you want to go ahead and find that place there. Same thing for if you're going to outsource Arabic, where do you outsource to? Again, Turkey, very good place to go ahead and outsource. Egypt, another one. Same thing for French. So you want to look at those vectors of time zones and locations and low-cost centers that can go ahead and serve a certain language community. And between those, those, which is manpower and the ability to go ahead and generate in-house capability and capacity to go ahead and execute for revenue that comes in across the group, across the world, you want to make that profitable model. Because even if you look at FacePlan, and we really like those people, they went on a pure thing of influencers being the value creator, right? The influencer business, unfortunately, independently does not create value. It creates fame, but it doesn't create value. And if fame was value at the time, it was creating that value. But by the time the stock crashed, value was not being defined as fame. So that's why you want multiple engines in there. You want fame, you want profitability, you want revenue growth, you want distribution, you want diversification. And between all of them, you have the capability of building value.
Right. That's a great answer. Thank you. And I have a second question on the India piece. So we've seen a lot of competition also come in recently, right? Like BGIS was something that went to Tesseract. And historically, from what I know, we've been doing most of the flagship events for BGMI across the country. I just want to know your view on how this competition affects us and what are the odds of us taking, say, I think Crafton does about 4 or 5 flagship events a year, right? How many a year are we targeting to take in our pie?
I think Crafton is both our investor, our client, and our partner. I think it'd be better if we look at this not as us versus them. Remember, Nodwin has a very strong, not only has an IP division, we also have a white label execution division. So and in the case of example of Crafton's work, that Crafton's work was done by Nodwin. Right? You want to have your own IPs, but you want to be able to go ahead and work with your investor partners to go ahead and execute their IPs really well. Same thing with Riot. Riot gives us their exclusive license for India to go ahead and conduct Valorant in India. But we also white label, go ahead and produce for them. White label agency work is both a market building, a margin building, and a relationship building tool for us. It allows us to go ahead and keep on running more work which is there. So if you look at the number of tournaments of Crafton, done by Crafton, but executed by Nodwin, and Nodwin's tournaments done by Nodwin and Notiver, between both Crafton and Nodwin, we have 80% market share, 90% market share. Which is great, right? Like, I'd rather be a duopoly with my best rather than be a monopoly. And as far as the competition goes, no, look, it's been forever that we've been a company that has held the market share, the predominant market share in India. We have companies like Sky and Tesseract and Esports Club and whatever. I think over time, the big question that always happens for any of those, and if you're an investor in one of them, things like that investor, where will you get an exit from? How will you get an exit? Where will the value be created, which is there? That's why the founder of the Esports Club, the second, third largest company, joins Nodwin, right? We've always made sure that we let our work, our value, our revenue, our growth drive our value-creating prospects, which is there. Our competitors change every 2 years, 1.5 years. And there's always going to be 5 competitors. As long as they change every 2-3 years, it's fine.
Right. That sounds quite fair. I just wanted to ask one last little follow-up. We're doing, I think, something called the Nodwin LAN that's coming up, right? Is that something that's a Crafton event that we're executing, or is it something that we've built ourselves with our own IP?
Nodwin LAN that is happening is currently happening out for Valorant. It is the Valorant Championship that is happening in our studios in Gurgaon. Please come
right.
We are working with Riot on that game with it.
So yeah, I'm sorry about that. All right, that makes sense. I think. Thank you. That answers all my questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments. Over to you.
Thank you everyone for joining the call. And please reach out to us in case we have any incremental questions.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, members of the management. On behalf of ICICI Securities, that concludes this conference. We thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. That's you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.